It's the 3rd of March, and we're ready for stocks. Dear students, we are ready to attack stocks. But first, we need a good joke. No, none of this bad joke stuff. We need a good, who's got a good joke? Okay, let's hear. What?
A friend of mine told me recently that it said in the Bible that guys are supposed to be taught in the morning.
Guys are supposed to what?
Guys are supposed to be taught in the morning. You know what it said?
Hebrews.
Yeah. You got it.
They opened the Bible to Hebrews. Yeah. Hebrews, yeah. That's pretty bad. Yeah, that's pretty bad. I have a ton of jokes about unemployed people.
Oh, yes, yes.
None of them work. So, but we weren't done with the bar jokes yet, though. We weren't done with the bar jokes. I'm sorry. I told you about the alligator, right? And the bear and the mushroom and the neutron and the duck and the rhinoceros. Did I tell you about the told you about the lamp, right? How about the, you're done? Okay. All right. Wait, don't go away. Don't go away. You're not done yet. Okay. Here's the second part. Okay. Da-da-da. Well done, Sergio. Okay. So did I tell you about the starter cables that walked into a bar? Yeah, these starter cables, jumper cables, walked into a bar, and they're really, you know, they got spikes and chains and you know, it is a rough pair of jumper cables, and they walk up to the bar and they say, "Look, hey, bartender, I want a beer right now." The bartender says, "All right, you're welcome here. Here's your beer, and I want you to go sit over there and don't start anything." Because they're jumper cables. See, I told you they're bad. Now, what's going on? Why isn't this working? Why isn't... Wake up. Reset. Okay, so let's quick and take a look. We looked before we started, and we've rebounded. I don't know if you noticed, but on Thursday, we were actually under, right? We were about 3,000 under. And is that why you should not panic? What happened? Right now we're back up 4,000. We're not 18,000, but we're back up 4,000. So now, do you want to sell right now? Are you scared? You want to sell something? Nobody
buy
wants.
More.
We want to buy. We don't have any more money. We have to sell something. We want to buy more. We put everything in the. Okay, so we're okay. Sell the Wells Fargo.
Yeah, I live in Baltimore.
Ooh, it's down and Beyond Meat. That's the other. Those are the scary things. These new IPOs. It's probably overpriced, is what it stands for. Imaginary profits only. Oh no, but this one looks pretty, like it could be a winner because people are all of a sudden changing their diets. Okay, what am I? This is the wrong. Where did we get this one? Introduction to. This is not the right one. Where is chapter? Chapter 5. I do chapter 1. I did. Can you take a joke? Chapter 5. That's what we wanted. Chapter 5. There we go. All right. So, introduction to stocks. How are we doing for time? Not bad. You ready? You excited? Stocks? I mean, you've seen how exciting they are, right? And sexy and risky. How we can go from $18,000 up to $3,000 down and back up to $4,000 up. So, don't gamble. Take all your savings and buy some good stock and hold it till it goes up. And if it don't go up, don't buy it.
Ah.
Is that good advice? He was a humorist in the mid-20th century. He's also he's credited with one of the best lines about politics. So I don't belong to any organized political party. I'm a Democrat. And that's right. That's how I feel. I'm a Democrat. I don't belong to any organized party. Democrats are dumb. We're so stupid. But at the same time, who's this? Oh, this is Sergio. Sorry. At the same time, we're not evil. Republicans are really smart, but they're evil. Okay, so who did I piss off now? Did you vote for Bernie? It's today. I got, and I went, I even carried my mail-in ballot to the library to get my sticker, and I left it at home. I'm going to wear my sticker today. Oh, well. But we see that stocks can make us very wealthy, right? If we're willing to wait over the long term, because we saw those mutual funds that did really, really well over decades. So we want to be owners. We want to own these companies. And don't, I wish I came up with a better name. Where did the name stock come from? Well, it came from the 1600s, when the New World was being explored, and these enterprises needed capital, which is a fancy word for money, resources. And so they sold shares to the shareholders in common. So you were buying stock in this company, and you were shareholders in common. So that's where the term common stock came from. But another term is equities. And I like that a little bit better. But the best term is company. Like I said, you're investing in a company. It enables you to participate in the profits and the growth generated by the business enterprise. And the cool thing is you're a limited liability owner. What does that mean? That means if the business goes bankrupt, you are off the hook for any other debts that the corporation has created. So if you bought one share in FedEx and FedEx all of a sudden went bankrupt, and then there's all these debts that people are coming after them for, they cannot come after you. Your $100 or whatever your one share was worth is now worth zero, and that's it. You are a limited liability. Have you taken Business 120 yet? Where you learned about the different structures of businesses? If you start your own business, you're a sole proprietorship. Or if you get together with a few people, that's a partnership. And you and the business are the same. So if you create any debts that the business incurs, they're your debts. Even if you go bankrupt, they come after you, unlike a corporation. Make sense? Does that make sense? Yeah, okay, good. What do you receive? Dividends, optional payments of earnings, and capital gains, capital appreciation. Are either of these guaranteed?
No.
Everyone should say no. Wait till I say, well, are either of these guaranteed?
No.
So we say that stocks are volatile. Yes, that means you've lost your shirt. Contrary to how many people believe and how many people behave, stocks are not simply millions upon millions of worthless pieces of paper. Now, it's all electronic. They represent ownership in real businesses. So you can walk into a Walmart, say, I have one share of Walmart. You can go to Disney. I have one share of Disney. He's passed away, but my dentist for many years, he would buy one share of Disney. And then he would call up Disney and say, hi, I'm one of your shareholders. Do you have any perks for us shareholders? And they say, yeah. And they'd send him, you know, a free ticket for every 2-3 tickets he bought to it worked for him, right? He only bought one share. So you could be shareholders. Over the long term of modern finance, and we usually use the last 90, 100 years, and we won't go into the reasoning for that, but the stock market as it measured by the Standard & Poor's 500, which we'll come back to in a couple of presentations, has averaged 10 to 11%. But in any one year, are we going to get 10 or 11%? Very unlikely. It's very unlikely. It's all over the map. 22%, minus 11, 4%, 7, minus 20, plus 30. The return has varied from a high of almost 54% in the 50s to a low of minus 43% in the 1930s. In 2008, 38.5%. And in any given year, there's a 1 in 3 chance, 1 in 4 chance of a down market. Now, is it 1, 2, 3 down, 1, 2, 3 down? Does it work that way? Don't you wish it did, right? No, it doesn't work that way. From 1982 to 2000, it went in two directions, up and way up, with the exception of 1987, which we'll take a look at. And then we had 3 years down, 2000, 2001, 2002. 2008, it's like a bolt of lightning out of the sky. 2009, 10, 11, 12, they're all up. So you just don't know. That's why you have to take a long-term perspective. And if you remember this guy from chapter 1, can stocks make us rich?
Yes, sir.
Yes, they can. Can stocks make us rich?
Yes.
Yes, but we have to have a long-term perspective. And we see the opportunity cost of just staying with bonds, loans, or short-term investments, or gold. Yes, Andres.
Do you think I'll be able to wait 200 years to see my stocks go
up? You know, biotech world is making, it's going to make changes that it's going to make the computer. I mean, who thought? A few people in the 1960s, one guy named Andrew Kay, and he worked for Apple for a while. He thought this is when a computer was the big as his room in the 1960s. He was sure that it was going to be this big, and we were all going to have our own little machine that you could, And I remember, Star Trek and communicator and stuff. And I remember HP, Hewlett Packard, they were the king of calculators in the 1970s and the 80s. They had an article, which I wish I would have saved, because it was so prescient. The guy was talking to his phone. His phone was making reservations for him. He was supposed to fly somewhere, and the flight got diverted. So before he landed at the new place he was being at, the phone had already made reservations for him. I thought it was going to be like Dick Tracy. You guys probably don't know Dick Tracy, but I thought it was going to be on your arm. I thought you were going to be talking to it and watching your shows on your arm. I told my niece.
Holographic kind of.
Yeah, it'd be here, and you just look at it. And some people have those wearables, they call them. What?
Apple Watch.
Now, more than just the Apple Watch, I thought it was going to have this screen, this big, on your arm.
Not in the skin,
maybe eventually. But I thought I thought it was going to be like this, and you'd look at it like this, because that was Dick Tracy. You guys don't know Dick Tracy, do you?
No,
just type of Dick Tracy. It was a cartoon strip, and then they made a cartoon out of it, but a cartoon strip. That's what I thought. I don't want to carry the darn thing around. I just want to look at it like this. I think a couple of companies, Samsung, a few, have experimented with that. But he wants to live forever. You guys, you might be able to live at least a very long time, because eventually you need a new liver, no problem. We'll just take your genes. We have your genes. We have your DNA. We'll grow you a new liver. Or 3D, what?
It's just going to be 100,000.
100,000 if you're lucky. Yes, it's going to be expensive, but that's okay. It's okay. What price immortality? But here, this is a more important one, I think. Did we see this one yet?
No.
I don't think we've looked at this one yet. This is actually Dow Jones Industrial Average, but which is similar to the S&P 500. But it's a list of stocks. It's all it is. And it starts in right before the Great Depression. And you had 10-year rolling periods. You start in 1928. How much did you have in 1937? Well, it turns out you had 3 years where you lost money, those 10-year periods. But then coming out of the Great Depression, out of World War II, we had the go-go 50s and 60s. Science. That's when I was born. And stocks went in two directions, up and way up. And what did you hear people hear? Here, when they said, when it was almost 20%.
No. Is it too late to go in?
Is it too late to get in, right? Yeah, the stock market has done unbelievable, making everybody rich, rich, rich. And it was too late to get in. That was the time was not good, because we had the 1970s. And the 1970s were a very difficult time for the economy. We had a lot of cultural things going on, the civil rights, women's rights, gay rights. Vietnam, Watergate, the first oil crisis. But the biggest problem was us, the baby boomers, our generation, because you had this huge swelling of people coming into the economy. We were 20 years old or the like, and we needed shoes and cars and refrigerators and jobs and housing. And so you had a 10-year period there, and stocks were very wildly, very richly valued. You had a 10-year period where you almost saw a negative return if you held stocks for 10 years. You just basically hit a little over zero. And what did people say then?
Is it too late to get in?
Ooh, not just Andres, but everybody. Ooh.
Is it too late to get
in? Yes, it's too late to get out, because then you had the 1980s and 1990s and new technologies, telecommunications, computers, miniaturization. internet, blue skies, productivity gains as far as the eye can see, and you had almost 20% returns over 10 years. The stock market went in two directions, up and way up, and what did you hear people say in 2000? You weren't here yet, some of you, but... Ooh, 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 is it too late to get it? Yes, it's good. The internet bubble burst and the housing bubble burst, and you have to go back to the Great Depression to see 10-year periods that were negative. And we didn't call it the Great Depression II. We called it the Great Recession. And to their credit, folks, there's still people who don't believe that it's over yet, but to their credit, the folks at the Federal Reserve and the Treasury, they made it happen. They kept the Great Depression, too, from happening. We didn't have 25% unemployment. We had,
15.
Yeah, 15. The official was about 11, but it was probably worse than that, about 15. Yeah.
But when unemployment was as high as the stock market increased by
20%. Over a couple, it took a couple of years. 2009 was about 30%, 29%. Then the next year was a bit, it took a few years, but you're right. That's when often the gains are made. When we're coming out of the recession, the people all of a sudden realize, oh, you know, the world isn't going to end. And so that's why, but the problem is you don't know when the recession is going to hit. You don't know when we're coming out. It's usually, it lags. So you have to be fully, it's just, now, what's happening? Ooh, what's happening now? Is this going to happen again? I don't know. I'm not going to bank. It looks like it, doesn't it? It certainly looks like it. And if we don't blow ourselves, die in our own ways, liberal democracies disappear, which they seem to be doing at an alarming rate, there are hundreds of millions of people coming out of poverty for the first time in places that we don't think about. Philippines, South Africa, Turkey, Africa,
Southeast Asia,
Eastern Europe, Russia, China, India. You, sometimes, anybody have kids, trying to get your kids to brush your teeth? Tough, isn't it? Yeah. Colgate and Crest are trying to get 1 billion Indians to brush their teeth for the first time. And then they'll realize, hey, you know, they won't fall out so easily. So, this is a tremendous opportunity for us investors because you can invest in Colgate. Everywhere you go around the world, Coca-Cola, everywhere you go around the world, no matter what little pueblito or little, you know, hut you find, you're going to find Colgate for sale, Coca-Cola for sale, Disney for sale, Nike. And so this is a great opportunity for us. You think? Do we take these things for granted? And we're immersed in this capitalist system, and it might just be the worst possible system in the world, except for all the others, right? Which are not so good. And so yes, okay. Anyway, so questions, thoughts, ideas, cool. Are we optimistic about the future?
Yeah.
As long as we don't die. Yeah, eat, drink, and may we are. There was a long thing. It used to say, "Eat, drink, and be merry," because tomorrow we die. And they weren't kidding. they were serious. Black plague. You ever hear the black plague? It was real popular at one time. Mm-hmm. Come through and killed one third of the people.
15 trends. Yeah.
What? 14. Well, throughout the Middle Ages, which some people want us to go back to. They want us to go back to the Middle Ages. Yeah, they're called Republicans. Anyway, traditionally, close to half of the return from stocks was from I met one yesterday. He was insane. He just tell me that you liberals are destroying the world. I said, I'm a stockbroker. He goes, oh. Traditionally, close to half of the return from stocks was from reinvested dividends. Stockholders used to expect 4 to 5, 6% in dividends every year. That was more than what bonds were paying. Bonds were paying 3-4%, sometimes more. And so people considered stocks much more riskier. They wanted higher dividends. So from 1936 to 2008, The return on dividends was almost 4%. But then in the 80s and the 90s, and a few other times, 60s, late 20s, dividends fell to 2% or even 0%. At the top of 2000, March of 2000, the dividend on the S&P 500 hit 1%. And people thought it was going to go to zero. They thought, we don't need dividends anymore. Give us capital gains. Because if you look from 19... 97 to 2007, it was only 1.5%, less than half of what it had been traditionally. And the reasons given were varied. Dividends were taxed at a higher rate than capital gains. That was true, but that's not true anymore. People wanted the businesses to invest the earnings for growth. Don't give it to me in dividends. I want you to invest for growth. Well, it's only so large a company can get. And now they're sitting, you have these companies like Apple and Microsoft and Google sitting on billions of dollars of cash. Facebook, what the hell do they do with it? You know, Microsoft, how many times can they rewrite Word? How many times can they rewrite Windows? They can't get it right. It doesn't matter how many times they do it. They don't want to get it right. That means you won't upgrade. Okay, stocks were no longer considered riskier than bonds. So that's not true. We know that's not true. Savings accounts, how much were they paying? You did the research, right? The most I saw was 1.7%. Some of you found 1.7% for a savings account. Anybody in here do that? On the, you online students. What? You saw 1.5? That's pretty high. Some of the folks in the on the online class, Capital One is paying 1.7%. So I thought that was pretty good. But still, it's less than stocks are paying. And people lost track of their senses and bid up the prices. Well, that's true, too. Some of the stocks were just insanely priced. And some of them are still very expensive. So here, I don't know if you can follow this here. But 1960, we saw that the yield on bonds was higher than the yield on stocks. But not much. They were pretty darn close. Both around 4%. It's like 4.3. This is about 3.8. And then we're throwing in the 1960s where stocks went in two directions, up and way up. And then inflation started to pick up in the 1970s. Inflation is the bondholder's worst nightmare because you're getting paid, you're lending your money out, and you're getting paid back in dollars that are depreciating. So bond investors started demanding higher and higher and higher interest rates. We're not going to buy your bonds unless you give us higher interest rates. And at the same time, the 70s were a very difficult time for the stock market, so the prices went down, the yield went up. And so we had yields of 7, 8% on stocks. Some, not all, but the average was about 5, 6%. And then the Federal Reserve Bank, under President Jimmy Carter, I know it's hard to believe, but we had a president named Jimmy a long time ago. He's still alive, believe it or not. He survived that really deadly brain cancer. He's still kicking. He did a lot with Habitat for Humanity. Appointed Paul Volcker, who just passed away about a year or so ago. And Mr. Volcker said to Mr. Carter, Mr. President, we can break the back of inflation, but it might cost you your presidency election in 1980. And it did, because they jacked up short-term interest rates. See, the Federal Reserve Bank has power over the short-term interest rates, not the long-term. That's the bond market. It created the worst recession since the Great Depression, but it had already cost, and that was during Reagan's, when Reagan started, 1980. But what did it do? Look what happened. The bond yield started coming down and down and down and down. The yield on stocks started coming down because the prices are going up and up and up and up until finally in 2000, we hit 1% on the yield of the S&P 500, and then we had the 2000 to 2002 bear market, so the yields crept back up. See, the yields on the bonds keep going down. Whammo, there's 2008. Whenever you see the yield on stocks go above the yield on bonds, it means people believe the world is going to end. And they have moved everything they can into bonds, pulled everything they can out of stocks. And what does that mean? It's time to buy stocks, because that was the best time to buy stocks. It happened again in 2012. Another fabulous time to buy stocks. In 2013, the stock market went up 30%. And it's happened again. Notice a couple other times. Some people will tell you that it's happening right now because the 10-year Treasury bond is now going down to 1.2% or something like that. So this ends at December 31st, 2019. So it's now down below that. Again, that is an indication. That is an indication historically that it's time to buy stocks. It's a great time to buy stocks. But there are other people who say, no, you're interpreting all wrong. It means the world's going to end. It means the whole thing's going to fall apart. It means the stocks are going to fall, and bonds are going to fall, and there's going to be bankruptcies, and we're going to have worldwide depression. And you know what? These people are always going to be calling for this. They're always going to be calling this, because what they're going to do is they're going to try to sell you gold and survival kits and
guns
and, yes,
food cans.
And so if the world ends, it doesn't matter where your money is. There's a little kick on that, so just remember that. Questions, thoughts, ideas? Am I sounding too pessimistic now? I'm not. I'm really not. Yeah, make sure you pass this spreadsheet around. Make sure everybody gets a chance to see the spreadsheet.
What do you do if the wood doesn't?
I'm going to go down to the beach. I'll meet you there. I'll probably try to bring vodka and marshmallows. I'll bring the opioids they gave me too.
Awesome.
Okay.
Which beach?
Ocean Beach. I live in Ocean Beach.
Oh,
so come down to Ocean Beach.
Oh man, I live in Imperial Beach.
Well, you go down to Imperial Beach then. Because if you really believe the world is going to end, get out of the Northern Hemisphere. Go down to Tierra del Fuego, Tanzania, somewhere sub-Saharan Africa, and learn to raise goats.
Why do you say that?
Because you got to be away from technologically based society. You know, people will say, I got 4,000 rounds of ammunition, and I got all these cans of beans, and I got pork bellies, and all these other things. I'm going to save me from the great destruction. Wrong. There's 100,000 people scavenging for food.
They're going to
rob that. Yeah. And you got 4,000 rounds of ammunition. So how many people can you kill?
4,000 people.
No, you can't kill 4,000 people. Most of the time you miss, right? When you shoot at somebody, you miss. It's going to take you maybe 5 to 10 bullets to kill one person. So maybe you've killed four or five.
No,
what?
You bought 2 bullets.
2 bullets? Are you that a good shot? Okay, good for you. I'm not, you know, I don't know. I never shot it. But so say you kill 2,000 people. What do you do with the dead bodies? You must be really hungry. Or maybe the other 50,000 people will eat them. But now you've run out of ammunition. And now there's 150,000 people behind them. And 200,000 people behind them. You see what I'm going there for? You
got a knife.
You got a knife, right. So do they. They got a knife. Yeah, no. Failure is not an option. You guys cannot let it fail. I mean, I'm old. I'm getting out of here soon. And so I'm leaving it to you. You cannot let it fail. You've got to be positive. You've got to get your pants on in the morning or whatever you wear. Go to work. Produce the goods and services that we need. Do it for the whole world. And make everybody happy. I don't know if you'll make them happy. At least make them comfortable so that they're not starving. Because it's pretty easy. If your child dies of dysentery because they don't have access to clean water, which costs 15 cents a day per person, wouldn't you feel comfortable strapping a bomb to yourself and blowing up Western civilization because they let it happen? I'm not condoning. It doesn't work. It doesn't change it. You know, it just makes the other people get angry at your culture and say, you daring foreigners, that's what I'm going to vote. I'm going to vote for Donald Trump because he's going to kill those Muslims. But you got to do it. I'm giving it to you. I'm giving it to you. So there you go. The pendulum swings. The bear markets of 2000 to 2002 and 2008 have changed investors' perceptions about dividends. We are going to love dividends. We now see investors and companies focusing more and more attention on dividends. Many companies that never paid dividends in the past are doing so now. Apple, Microsoft, Google, they got tons of cash coming out of their ears. So now they're saying, okay, it's time to start paying back to shareholders. And the tax law has changed so that dividends are taxed roughly the same as capital gains. So it's been a big windfall for the very wealthy. And there's a book called Dividends Don't Lie. The book's not that great, but the title is wonderful because it's true. She's here. She was actually based, I think she passed away just recently, but she's based in La Jolla. Dividends Don't Lie. Every piece of information that we see, this class, online and the financial statements, could be a total fabrication. And in some cases it was. You ever hear Enron?
Yes.
You did hear Enron? No, well, look it up. Enron. Enron. Weren't the only ones, WorldCom, Global Crossing, Tyco. There are many companies that basically cook the books. But dividends don't lie. Why? Because they sent you a check. Well, they don't send you a check anymore. It's electronically deposited in your account. But when they say we paid a dollar's worth of dividends, they paid it because you got it. And this is attributed to John D. Rockefeller. You've heard of Standard Oil, the Rio, yeah. Do you know the only thing that gives me pleasure? It's to see my dividends coming in. Now, we don't know if he really said it because his neighbor said that he said it, so we'll see. Okay, so what are the pros? Allows the general public to share in the rewards of the business enterprise. They've been the best financial investment. I had to add that because the real estate investors would jump up and down and say, okay, it's a different world. Easy to buy and sell, very liquid, limited liability. And as we've made mention already, we are participating in a system that has increased the standard of living for everybody. If you don't believe me, read historical novels, dear students, from the 1840s or from the middle of the Middle Ages, from the Middle Ages, you know, Dark Ages. A toilet is a wonderful thing. And the kings and queens in all their splendor could not even imagine that you could walk into this little metal box or ceramic box and flip a switch or pull a lever and hot water would come out. They couldn't even think about that. And we take it for granted, right? Right? You want hot water in the morning?
I don't take it for granted.
I don't take it for granted either. Now, what are the cons? Risky, volatile, hanky-panky. That's where the money is. So we have to be ready. We have to be ready for the volatility. The volatility is real. I'll never forget that line. It was one of the online students said, "The volatility is real." I said, "You're damn straight." Okay, come on, let's go. So now let's take a look at volatility. This is the Standard & Poor's in 500 last year, 2019. And so you just went through the Christmas Eve massacre in 2018 when the stock market, I forget what it lost.
Oh, Christmas crash.
Yeah, Christmas crash, Christmas Eve, Christmas, because it's not open on Christmas. And the stock market lost almost 20%, almost, but not quite. So you're not putting your money in the market. No way, no how. But anyway, it did almost 20% in just a couple of months. So you put your money in here, what happens? Pull it out quick. No, okay, put it back in. All right, come on out, pull it out. Oh, forget about it. The end of the year. This is going to do what it did last year in 2018. At the end of the year, it went down. No, at the end of the year, it went up. So do you see, are you going to choose when the market's going to go up, when the market's going to go down?
It's unpredictable.
It's in the short term, the statistics have shown it is random. You like random? Random, unpredictable? No, but in the long term, right? Global economy expands? No, it is not. So remember this, because we're going to come back to this guy. Okay, now, all right, so now I don't even know if we should do this, because we're about a week behind. Part of it is me, I apologize. Part of it was we started on a Thursday, not a Tuesday. But let's quickly, I'm going to run through these quickly. Go through where stocks are okay. We're going to try to get up to 30. Okay, so I'm going to move fast. Usually it takes about 2 minutes per. I'm going to move fast. I apologize. If I'm going too fast, just go, "Hey, help me," and please ask questions. There are two stock markets: the primary market and the secondary market. Now, when people talk about the stock market, they're talking about the secondary market. The primary market is the market where securities are sold for the very first time. These are called IPOs, initial public offering. But what's the really stand for? It's probably overpriced, or imaginary profits only. The vast majority of us folks stay away from these IPOs. Some do really, really well, like Google, like Facebook. But some just crash and burn. What?
It's a very small percentage.
Yeah, most, within a year, most IPOs are selling at 50% of what they went public for. So the people who sold them become fabulously wealthy. The people who started the company, and that's why, you know, if you want to be an entrepreneur, God bless you, good luck. The ultimate investment is starting a business, because that's how you become fabulously wealthy. But for every one of those businesses, for every one Google, there are dozens Dogpile, Lycos, Go, Ask Jeeves. You've never heard of these, have you? You've heard of OC? You have it still? Is it still around? No, I didn't think it's still around. So, yeah, you don't know if you're going to be the winner. It's called going public, taking public. My recommendation is stay away. The secondary market, this is the one that we're interested in. That's the vast majority of transactions. Why should you go public? Well, you're going to become very, very wealthy, right? In that one day. In fact, the two gentlemen who started Google really didn't, at first, didn't want to go public. They were making money hand over fist, and they didn't want to go public. And what did Wall Street do? Ooh, you want to become instant multi-billionaires? Ooh, they waved. And they said, okay, okay, let's do it. And Facebook is a real good example. The gentleman, what's his name, Zuckerberg? His tax bill for the state of California when they went public was $1 billion. Yeah, right? Yeah, that's right. That means he had made tens of billions of dollars in one day. So you ready to do it? You want to be an entrepreneur?
Yeah.
Yeah, good luck. Okay. And also, when you are that large, think about it. How do you sell a business that large? It's impossible. You have to divvy up the spoils somehow. And that's how we do it. We use a billion shares or 100 million shares, and we allow the general public to buy the shares. Because if you were one of the people who started GE or Coca-Cola or Walmart or Facebook or whatever, how would you sell your shares? How would you sell your share of the business? Anybody know one of the largest private companies around? Anybody know any of the largest private companies?
Lego.
Lego. Well, I don't know. They're based in Denmark, right? I don't know if they're still. They're probably still. Yeah, probably. Mars. Who is Mars?
The chocolate.
M&M's. Snickers.
Trezors.
Yeah.
Yeah. The good stuff.
You can buy Nestle. You can buy Hershey. But you can't buy Mars. Right? And so, when you become public, you now have a very strong responsibility. You have to abide by the rules of the Securities and Exchange Commission. If you went to Mars and said, how much money did you make last year or last quarter? They'd say, excuse me? Who are you? Are you the IRS? We don't have to talk to you. But if you're a publicly traded company, you're Hershey, you're Nestle, you're Walmart, you have to produce two, well, actually more than two, but these are the two major ones. You have to produce annually a 10K and quarterly a 10Q. So what was the annual one?
10K.
Everyone should say 10. What's the annual one?
10K.
And what's the quarterly one?
10Q.
What's that?
10Q.
You're welcome. 10Q, you're welcome. One little Latina didn't say a word all semester long, but she said, that's so wrong. I love that joke. And you have to have a public meeting. You have to allow shareholders to have their say at least once a year about what's going on. And there were a few years in the late 1990s that Sempra, which is SDG&E, that's the SDG&E is owned by Sempra, that's the holding company, and they do have a few other things. They were making some big boneheaded maneuvers. And so every year, At the annual meeting, the locals would here in San Diego would come up and scream at them and tell them how stupid they were. And so one year they said, okay, we'll fix your little wagon. They moved the meeting to London, one of the most expensive cities in the world. So, okay, you want to come and yell at us? You get the plane ticket, you go live, you go stay there in London, and you come yell at us. Chapter 5 goes into huge detail about IPOs. Stay away from them, in my humble opinion. If you or when you take the Series 7, you've got to know the IPO process upside down, left side, right. It's very stupid. It's not something that's really important for the vast majority of us. But you have to know it. They'll make sure you understand that. All right, so now what are the secondary markets? How are we doing? Not bad. The secondary markets are sometimes called I never heard this, but this is what aftermarket. They provide liquidity, which is a fancy word for saying I can sell my shares. I got 100 shares of McDonald's. There's a market out there. Boom, it's gone. Somebody else wants to buy those shares. And if your bank says, well, you know, we want to lend you some money, do you have any collateral? You can say, look, I got 100 shares of Microsoft, and this is what it's selling for right now. When people talk about the stock market, they're talking about the secondary market. And the secondary market is organized into two categories. That's not true anymore. It's the whole thing is not true anymore. But they're going to say you have to understand the difference between the exchanges and the over-the-counter market, the OTC. With technology now, these differences are gone. But it used to be, and we're going to see a film, or maybe not, we'll say a small part of it, where you'll see people screaming and hollering. You see any of these films? Have you seen any of those films anymore? You don't see them anymore because they're all gone. Those people are all, there's a few left on this floor. They're just talking to one another, having coffee and stuff. But the double auction market, where these people were yelling and screaming and trading stocks on behalf of investors, they were centralized locations, the New York stock market. Whereas the over-the-counter market were just basically first telephone system, people just calling each other up and yelling at each other. And then now it's now all electronic. So the changes are just getting started. I mean, the amazing, in the last 20 years, the changes have been immense. So let's take a look at historically what happened. On the exchanges, everything was done on the floor, on the exchange floor. Everybody was yelling and screaming out prices of what they would buy and sell. You're used to a single seller and multiple buyers in an auction, right? You see the one person yelling out the prices and the people buying. No, it was chaos. Multiple sellers, multiple buyers, all trying to transact at the same time, using hand signals and screaming and yelling at one another. But both due to technology and the sheer massive amount of shares, that's all gone. Some large trades still involve some human interaction, but it is far less than, I guess, 0.01%. You see the people now, they're just standing there, and every once in a while they got a deal to do, but it's all electronic. And you've heard of the New York Stock Exchange? The NYSE? Yeah? The New York Stock Exchange, right? The place where all the big boys and girls on Wall Street, well, not anymore, but $23 trillion of company worth. It started in 1792, when Wall Street really was next to a wall at the edge of the city. And they traditionally were the largest and most prestigious companies. And if they don't stay large, they get kicked out. You can't be on our, have you heard of Kodak?
Yeah, the Kodak camera, not anymore.
They developed the digital camera, the technology that put them out of business. Because no matter where you went, there are always little yellow boxes of film. And anybody still use film? Some people still.
I want to.
Some people do. Okay, big changes. You know, in their 200th birthday in 1992, if you had told the folks that in the next 20 years they would see far more changes than the first 200 years, they would have probably thought you were insane, but you would have been right. In 2005, they purchased an electronic exchange called Archipelago and the Pacific Regional Exchange. They then became a publicly traded corporation. It used to be a partnership. I mean, these partners were, you know, well-heeled people. It wasn't until 1966 that the first woman was allowed in to the boys' club. And then it wasn't until 1992 that a person of color was allowed in. But now it's a public corporation. It's like Walmart. It's like McDonald's. You can buy stock in it. They phased out the double auction system where people are screaming and hollering at another in favor of exclusively trading electronically. It's all electronic now. And then in 2011, Germany's stock market tried to buy them. The Germany stock market is based in Frankfurt. That's their New York. And they tried to buy the New York Stock Exchange. And the European regulators said, oh, no. We don't want you to get that big. Then on 2013, they were bought by a 13-year-old derivatives trading firm from Atlanta, Georgia, called Intercontinental Exchange. They are now owned by a company based in Alabama. How's that for the New Yorker's pride, right? Yeah, so check it out. From ICE, not the immigration folks, but Intercontinental Exchange. So then check out a couple of interesting articles. But you could type in just, you know, New York Stock Exchange history, and you'll see a tremendous amount. So there used to be floor brokers and house brokers, people running around the floor, but they're not there anymore. And they were very worried that their aggressive moves to all electronic trading meant the end of their way of life. Well, it really wasn't the end. This is a big change. And face-to-face interaction to sitting in front of a computer all day. Any sound familiar? Does it sound familiar? Anybody taking online classes? Yeah. Yeah? Are you sitting in a classroom with a bunch of other people, listening to jumping up and down, screaming? No, you're sitting in front of a terminal, and the computer and the professor sitting in front of a terminal. That's why I don't really like teaching online as much as I like teaching face-to-face. Face-to-face, I get to see your faces when I tell you the bad jokes. You know, I can't see the online students' faces. But, you know, there's so many students who say, I can't get to the college. I have to work all day, and then I have to come home and feed the kids. I don't start working on my class until 10 o'clock at night. And I know because they turn in their work at 2 a.m. in the morning. So, what?
That's me.
That's you, right. So it's real, you know. So it's not just the New York Stock Exchange, it's college and Canvas, and not the only places where people are sitting in front of a computer all day long. Now, the specialists, we're going to see them in the video on Thursday, but these are people, and they've changed. They don't call them the specialists anymore. Now they're called designated market makers, which came from the OTC. Or supplemental liquidity providers. But think about it. All of a sudden, all the buyers disappear. What happens to the price? Whew. If you're a specialist, your job is to jump in there and start buying. Because people are trying to sell. So you jump in there and try to buy. The exact same thing happens on the other side. If there's no buyers, I'm sorry, no sellers, and everybody wants to buy, what's going to happen to the price? It's going to skyrocket. So your job is to jump in there and start selling. You see what their job is? They're trying to jump in front of a freight train coming at them. And so it sounds like, oh, they're doing it for the good of the market. No, they're trying to make a buck too. They're trying to make a buck too. And they had some advantages that other traders didn't have. And every once in a while, there was a very, very rare, considering how much trading was going on. It was a little bit of hanky-panky going on. But they, because technology, they've basically been phased out. Now they're just like the folks over here, which we'll get to in a bit. Okay, now, that was the biggie. And then there was the others, which were tiny little guys, the Amex. So this guy represented, what, more than 90%. This guy represented about 3%. And what was the Amex, the American Exchange? People called it the curb. Huh? Because these guys, mostly guys, were out on the curb outside the New York Stock Exchange looking in the window, seeing what's going on, and then they would trade outside. Is that cool or what? It's cold in the wintertime in New York, folks. It's hot. So now, eventually, they got their own building down the street on Wall Street. But because they saw the writing on the wall, they saw what was happening with the NASDAQ, and they realized they're never going to get very big. So about 20 years ago, late 80s and early 90s, they started concentrating on securities. In the early 90s, so almost 30 years ago, they started concentrating on securities other than stocks. Remember the ETFs, the exchange-traded funds? They started on the Amex. They were purchased by the NASDAQ in 98, and then they kicked them to the curb in 2004. They said, we don't want you. So the New York Stock Exchange bought them in 2008, and they moved them down the street in the same building. They changed it. First, they called it NYSE MICKET, or MKT, or I guess market. And when I saw, I didn't even know this. I'm a stockbroker. You'd think they would tell us. I called my boss. I said, do you know they changed the name of the Amex to New York Stock Exchange MKT? And he goes, no. Why don't they tell us these things? The changes are happening so fast, nobody cares. Nobody cares. So now they finally changed it back to New York Stock Exchange American, so I don't know. Still, everyone calls it the Amex. And then there were the regional exchanges, Chicago, Philadelphia, Pacific, Boston, Denver, Cincinnati. They were modeled after the New York Stock Exchange, but they were tiny, and some of them were dealing with undesirable, unethical issues. That's another word for stock and companies. The Denver Exchange was a place where if you bought something on the Denver Exchange, you probably expect it to go bankrupt pretty darn soon. Stay away from it. And they have not been immune to the rush to consolidate. The New York Stock Exchange bought the Pacific Exchange, which is actually based in LA and San Francisco. See, these exchanges are supposed to be centralized locations, but the Pacific Exchange is San Francisco and LA. I don't know how that worked out. And then the NASDAQ bought the Philadelphia Exchange. The Philadelphia Exchange started specializing in technology stocks, in chip stocks. So often you'll hear people say, on the Philly Exchange, on the Philadelphia Exchange, you know, Intel did this or that, because they have specialists who work on those. But again, look, they never amounted to very much. The regional exchanges, 4%. Never much of what the trading going on. And then there were exchanges, still are, for specialized things such as options and futures. That was started and still is mostly based, oh, they're all over the place now, but Chicago. Why Chicago? Well, you know, Californians know that there's some place on the other side of the country called the East Coast, and we know there's something in the middle of the country, maybe corn or something like that, but Chicago was the place where all the beef and all the wheat and all the things that the heartland was creating would be brought to and then shipped through the St. Lawrence River, through the Great Lakes, out to the rest of the world. And so Chicago became the place for the buying and selling of these things that were linked to those commodities. But again, now all the regional exchanges and the New York Stock Exchange and the NASDAQ, they all sell the same things. So they're all stealing each other's lunch. Okay, so those were the exchanges, and the futures and the options, which we'll come back to futures and options later on in the semester. So finally we get to the OTC. Now, the OTC started as a place for just companies that, you know, were not very desirable. Small companies are trying to make it, but not doing a very good job. Not too bad. And they're still there. The bulletin board and what some people, you hear them call it, the pink sheets. Because they published a newspaper that was on pink paper. Yeah, quick.
Is it possible to get stock for free in these pink sheets?
No, you have to pay for it. But it's dirt cheap. And there's a reason why it's dirt cheap. It's worthless. This is the wrong side of the tracks. This is the red light district. Don't buy anything here. And we'll take a look at these later on. But then along in the early 1970s came a system called the NASDAQ, which we'll take a look at in just a moment. This guy has now gotten large enough to rival the New York Stock Exchange. In fact, it used to be, you know, just one company. This was the company. This was the entity. It was a partnership. And now the NASDAQ has gotten big enough now it's a two-horse race. So instead of the specialists and the brokers on the floor, we had market makers, or sometimes called dealers. And we're going to see the difference between these two. They keep an inventory, like the specialists. We're going to see the casas de cambio, and that's exactly the same thing. They keep an inventory of dollars and pesos, and they buy and sell. And so this was, I mean, literally, when they say widely scattered telecommunication, you'd call a guy, Fred, up in Minneapolis. He'd say, Fred, you got 100 shares of that XYZ company? He goes, yeah, I got it. I'll give you $25. And then he'd slam this door. No way. Yeah, well, you 30. You want 30. And he slammed the phone down on him. And the guy says, I'll call and pay you 26. And he slammed the phone down on him. They would take lessons in how to be rude to one another. You don't want to. But that's, maybe you do. Maybe you like getting rude. But then along came, as we'll see, the NASDAQ, and they made it electronic, and there's no more telephone systems. We're going to talk about the ask price, the bid price. We'll come back to these later, and the spread, because that's the difference between the bid and the ask price. That's how you make your money. Unlike brokers who charge a commission, dealers make money from the spread of the bid and the ask prices. In other words, you see one price when you look up on the internet, right? You see one price. Wrong. There are dozens of prices. You go down to TJ? You go down to San Isidro? Do you? Nod your head yes or no. Well, if you do, we'll see the presentation. We don't have time for it. We'll see it Thursday. You're going to see dozens of prices. And not just one. You're going to see two. Two next to one another. What they'll take your dollars and give you pesos for, and what they'll take your pesos and give you dollars for. And that's what's going on here. You buy the shares at a certain price, but when you sell them, you get the lower price. So they're called the bid and the ask price, which is stupid. It's hard to remember. I like to think of retail and wholesale, right? Because when you retail, you pay more than when you sell at wholesale, right? That's how it works. And that's how it works for you. Now, the bid and the ask prices used to be a huge spread, and still is on those the pink sheets and the bulletin board. Still a big spread. But now, because of technology, the spread may be 2 pennies or 5 pennies. It might be, or a penny. So technology has definitely made trading a lot cheaper. So here it is, the NASDAQ. And people don't want you to they don't want you to remember that it actually meant the National Association of Securities Dealers Automated Quotation System. That's what it stood for. But they don't want you to even remember that. So forget about that. They started in 1971 with the first electronic, this is before the internet, right? Electronic system that provided up-to-date bid and ask prices. It used to be a place where companies got started, and once they got big enough, they went to the New York Stock Exchange. But some of these companies in the 1970s that started, you may have heard of them, Apple, Microsoft, Intel, Oracle, they got large enough to be on the New York Stock Exchange, and so the New York Stock Exchange came a-calling, and what did they say? No, thanks. We're happy here on the NASDAQ. And you could hear two words in the 23rd floor of the New York Stock Exchange building, in the boardroom. The first one was, oh. Oh. Yeah. In fact, the NASDAQ began positioning itself. They put out advertisements as the securities market of the future. So who's the securities market of the past? New York Stock Exchange is still far larger than NASDAQ, but they're both very large. What is it? Yeah, here, $15 trillion. So this was, what, $23 trillion? This is $15 trillion, but still, they have the biggest companies, Google, Microsoft, Apple. Okay, so it's a three-tier market, global, select, global, and national. But it's about, 2,800 companies, right? What is it? I don't see where it is. Oh, yeah, here it is. 3,300 companies. Okay, I'm going quickly because I want to be done. I apologize. Some of you are kind of going, You getting an education?
Yeah.
Okay, good. All right, now, the third market. What's going on here? You have 100 shares to buy or sell. You go to New York Stock Exchange, you go to NASDAQ, no problem. But what if you're a mutual fund company and you want to buy 100,000 shares? Or you're an insurance company or a pension fund? You're not going to get the best prices on these guys. So they created their own system, these own systems, the Intermarket, that said, we don't want 100 shares, we want 100,000. And they acted as dealers between the Texas Pension Fund and Fidelity Investments Mutual Fund. And so the transactions were a whole lot cheaper. But look what happened. NASDAQ said, we want a piece of that action. They bought the Intermarket. And then with the internet came the fourth market, which wasn't normally called the fourth market. They called them ECNs, electronic communication networks. These were modeled, believe it or not, after eBay. So they said, you know what? We can bypass the New York Stock Exchange. We can bypass the NASDAQ. And it started with large pension funds and mutual fund companies. But then they started to court the retail customers. And so what happened? The archipelago was bought by the New York Stock Exchange. See what's going on? We got to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And what's the end goal? Yeah, right. Monopoly. You want to be as big as you can be, but it's not going to happen. New York Stock Exchange and NASDAQ are both deeply entrenched, so we're not going to have a single company, but we will have a duopoly. Here's the punchline. I apologize. I went too fast. Okay, Piano. Isn't the stock market all just one big malignant casino? And you're going to get this question from people when they know or they find out that you're interested in stocks and you've studied stocks. They're going to say, it's all one big casino. Well, is it? Yes. And no, that's the problem. You know, it's such a huge system that to many people it is a casino. There are many individuals who see the markets as one big crapshoot. You know, for them, the way to riches is to buy and sell and buy and sell and buy and sell. We call them, everyone should say, speculators. Or, be careful, they might say, trader. Don't call me a trader. No, trader, not traitor. It is very difficult, folks. You're up against the best in the business. Remember John Merriweather? And what usually happens is people give up after, you know, after 3 weeks, after 3 months at the you know, latest. They just wind up losing so much money because the emotions take hold and the volatility is real and they can't predict what the hell's going to happen next day, especially with times like this, right? And so they come back. I remember I was at a party with a woman I met. I met her once, and that was the only time. She found out I was a stockbroker, and she yelled at me left side right. She bought Apple when it, you know, skyrocketed, and then it plummeted. And then I said, "But it's a long-term investment. You have to hang on." She goes, "I already sold it." Okay, fine. But it's a long-term. And then went up, you know, five more times. And the answer is no. Many others, that's you folks, look at the capital markets as a way to anticipate in the growth and prosperity of the global economy. We call them, everyone should say that, we call them, which one are you going to be? You're going to play this game? You might be good at it. You might do really, really well. You know, I can't help you too much except to point you to Jesse Livermore and read his book and read other books like that. But with a long-term orientation, investors are usually very well rewarded. And it gives us yet another time to get another opportunity to quote Mr. Benjamin Graham, an investment operation is one which, upon thorough analysis, promises safety of principal and an adequate return. Operations not meeting these requirements are speculative. Oh yeah, Piano, what about Enron? What about Global Crossing? What about Tyco, WorldCom? Aren't all corporations all crooks? Well, not really. Fraud and accounting, trickery, gimmicks have always been with us. They are always going to be with us. You heard, because that's where the money is, right? It was attributed to a bank robber. He didn't really say it. But why do you rob banks? Because that's where the money is. And it's where the money is here. Normally, but not always, these firms are regulated to the bulletin boards, the pink sheets. Stay away from these places. But for every one Enron, there are hundreds, thousands of companies that continue to do business with integrity and honesty. Usually, you know, sometimes they, like companies like Coca-Cola, they say, oh, you know, we don't want people to, or Seagram's, we don't want people to drink too much of our product. We know it's killing them, but go ahead and drink too much of our product. Equity funding, 1973. Who are they? You don't know them. Look them up. I'm sure there are plenty of articles on the internet. This was a company, an insurance company, that would go into a room and literally make up policies. They would write up policies as if these people were real and making payments on their insurance policies. How long do you think that was going to last? They were lying about how much money was coming in the door because it wasn't there. They just made up these people and said, oh, look how many policies we have. In 86, Ivan Boesky, Vagabond Inns. Have you heard of Vagabond Inns? They're here in San Diego. They're based here in San Diego. And he used them as a front, and that's the movie Wall Street. It was based on Ivan Boesky and Michael Milken, who Trump just pardoned for his crimes in 1980s. And then in 2002, Enron, Global Crossing. 2008, Fannie, Freddie, Lehman Brothers, Citi, WaMu, Wachovia, AIG, we all thought that, you know, it doesn't matter how expensive a house is, we can make payments on it by just simply pulling income out of thin air. And then don't forget Bernie Madoff. They're going to let him out of, he's dying, so they're going to let him out for the last few months of his life. So we'll see if they let him out. 10, 20 years from now, someone else is going to take your place. It's always going to happen. So you have to acknowledge that. You have to just tell the people, yeah, you know you're right. For some people, it is a casino, and there are crooks out there. But look at what it's done. Look at the good part. It's done really well for the rest of the world. So to recap, because we're going to come back to that. When we start on Thursday, we're going to start with that Casas de Cambio presentation and try to look at the bid and the ask price. But to recap, securities markets exist to allow investors a safe, cost-effective method to participate in the success of the global economy. And even with all the underhand shenanigans, they have performed very well. They are changing at breakneck speed. What's the ultimate goal? 24-hour trading. That's you haven't heard that much. About 10 years ago, we're going to have 24-hour trading. It's 2 o'clock in the morning, and you want to sell your McDonald's shares, you can do it. I want to sleep at 2 o'clock in the morning. But it is exciting and for some of us scary to watch, especially for those of us who stake in the outcome. So on Thursday, we're going to start with that Casas de Cambio, the bid and the ask prices, look at a few prices as the stock market moves up and down. And then we're going to watch what happens when it does fail. What happens when the markets do fail? Because they do. It's not perfect. We're humans, right? Okay? So thank you so much. We really are happy you're still with us. You haven't dropped the class. You notice the parking lot's a lot emptier, isn't it? Yeah, okay.